everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, no, not Geek Actually, Tech Actually, episode 96 for the 7th of August, 2010.
All habits die hard, honey.
They are, yes. This is for the 7th of August, 2010. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fantastic, man. I'm doing very good. I know. Number one, I did that to throw you off, and number two is because I have had to be up since 7 o'clock this morning, so therefore, I'm already halfway through a day. So
are we going to go into why you were up at 7 o'clock in the morning?
I have been visited by my mother, who is in town at the moment. No, that's fantastic.
Mothers are great. We're not saying anything bad about mothers.
It's absolutely.
Mothers at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. Totally different situation.
Are the issue.
But I love you, Mom. I'm just being, sort of
we
nasty.
All love our mothers.
So. I love her to bits. It's just I don't love 7 o'clock in the morning. So
exactly.
Combine there the two go. And it, you know, balances out.
Now, we aren't joined again by Shane Gregory this week because he does have work commitments, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. He joins us whenever he can. Since moving Tech Actually to Saturdays, poses a slight scheduling issue with Shane. I was hoping he'd be here, actually, because we've got a fairly in-depth conversation. Actually, we've got two fairly depth conversations this week. It's been kind of a security nightmare this week, so we'll talk a little bit about that later. What is Tech Actually? It's the official tech podcast of geekactually.com. It was the original tech component of the Geek Actually show, as you would have heard by my bluff at the beginning, my stuff up. but now we've separated the two shows, and this is the dedicated tech show. Okay, so first thing, speaking of mothers at 7 o'clock in the morning, last time we spoke to her was at 7 o'clock in the morning, but our very good friend Natalie Del Conte, this week,
she's so pretty,
had a bouncing baby boy. So congratulations to you, Natalie Del Conte. Congratulations. I heard the news that you were pregnant late. I heard that you had a baby late, so I do apologize. But congratulations, and I'm very, very happy for you, and I hope you take some serious time off to, you know, love and hold your baby. But I know that you're a workaholic and we'll probably be back at CNET tomorrow.
You'll probably have it under one arm carrying it into work.
So we will endeavor to see if we can get Natalie back on the show at some point, because she is always good value. Okay, let's move on to the news. Do you remember Paul Seglia? I'm not sure how to pronounce his name.
Oh, this is the guy that reckons he owns Facebook.
Yeah, and this is a photo of him on screen now. If he doesn't look sleazy to you, I don't know, and I don't mean that.
Dude, that hair, it's so epic.
And I love the fact he's wearing a Get Shorty t-shirt. Anyway, this is the man, for those who don't remember, who basically says that Mark Zuckerberg had a contract with him, and that he actually owns 84% of Facebook. And he's taken them to court.
I love the fact that it's 84% of Facebook.
Well, it was a very strange contract. It was something like, you know, you pay him a certain amount of money, and then for every day that it was late, there was another percentage added to it. So it's like, because it was late, it ended up being at 84%. So it was, anyway, Mark, this is the contract that Mark Zuckerberg goes, I'm pretty sure we didn't sign.
That's never something you want to start that sort of a situation with.
Well, apparently, why this has come up again is because Mark Sigley has actually come out and said that, he really doesn't know much about it, the social networking and stuff like that. So when he owns Facebook, he'll rehire Mark Zuckerberg to run it.
Of course, yes.
So it's good to know that Mark has a job.
Well, he should take some, I'm sure he is taking that to heart right now and just going, well, thank God for that.
Now, actually, I just want to stress here that to Bloomberg, this is an exact quote from him. At some point in the future, I start running Facebook. I guess I'm going to have to hire him to keep running the company.
I like the I guess. So there you go. He's not even. He's like him or someone like him.
Yeah, someone like him. You
maybe,
know,
maybe
said, and he actually says, I really don't have much interest in it.
Wow. So like.
This man is, look, I gotta bring up his photo again. This man is just a joy, isn't he? And apparently, and I don't have this in writing, so I'm going to kind of paraphrase this a little bit. But apparently, according to a podcast I was listening to the other day, how this all came about was that he was having legal troubles with his other companies. And so they were digging through all of his legal records, and that's when the contract was found. And it's like, oh yeah, I got this. Maybe this will help my legal troubles.
Wow, that's
yeah. No, he's a class act. He really is, and I think that
literally.
I think it's all going to fall apart eventually. So I think we'll.
I'm not sure from which side it'll be. Either way, it's going to be a great sea of
errors.
And
with 500 million users and the amount of money that Facebook has, if this ever got to a point where it looked like something might happen.
I think they'll just murder him with a pile of money.
Well, I was about to say, they'll just drop a truckload of money on him and say, go away. You know?
Either way.
That's what I believe, anyway. So, on more locally based news, I don't have a lot of positive things to say about the coalition. And now, for our international listeners, that would be the coalition of the Liberal Party and the National Party, which is the Conservative government.
The opposition.
Conservative opposition. That's right. The current opposition to our current Labour government. I don't have a lot of good things to say about them. And I have come to odds with their beliefs. All right. That's the political opinion. I actually don't have a lot of trust or faith in the Labour Party at the moment either, with the crap that they've been pulling over the last couple of years. But good news came out of the coalition camp. Now, we have a federal election coming up in 2 weeks, as we know, and I really, really, really do not want the coalition to win. As much as the Labour Party has been causing problems, I don't want to go back to a Howard-type government again, but that's just me. And I, you know, there's people who are going to argue with me. That's fine. But good news for us geeks is that the coalition finally came out this week. Finally. It only took them a year, but finally came out this year and said, whether in opposition or whether in government, the coalition will not back the internet censorship filter.
Thank God.
So what this means for all those people who are not keeping score is that the internet censorship filter was put off till next year, as we all know. But in a year's time, we have to deal with this again. Well, we already know that the Greens, who hold the balance of power at the moment in the Senate, have already said they won't back it. But between the coalition and the Labour Party, they sort of still push this thing through. Without the coalition backing the internet censorship filter, it cannot go through.
Thank Christ.
So if the Labour Party wins, the coalition and the Greens will not back it, which means it will fail. And if the Liberal Party wins, they've already said the first thing they will do is drop it as a policy. So
great.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm calling it right now like a doctor in surgery. The internet censorship filter is dead.
Beep.
Okay? So as far as I'm concerned, it is dead until I read otherwise. Okay. That felt so good.
Kellison says at this point he's voting for anarchy.
Look, I feel cathartic. I feel like I've just expunged a tumor out of
exactly.
my body.
Yeah, we've finally got some winning sort of ground here.
Absolutely.
And I'm very happy.
It feels good. It feels good to be able to say that. Now, if we can just get an R rating in place, and we have another piece of good news coming up.
Come on. One step at a time, Dave. One step at a time.
The election is a vote for the one we hate the least. Absolutely, Snake Oz. I agree with you 100%. Look, my lovely wife, Katie, has already said she's just voting Greens. she refuses to vote the Labour Party, who she used to vote for. She refuses to vote Liberal, obviously. And she just said, look, as far as she's concerned, she'd rather have independents in there, you know? Anyway,
yeah.
Neither of the parties are thrilling either of us very much at the moment. Anyway, so let's, before we go on to the next piece of government news, because we have another piece of government news, which is kind of funny. Election time brings out the strangest behavior. But it is tech-related, so we will bring it up. First of all, we will say that Windows, Microsoft has released, so if you have not updated your... If you're one of those people who don't update your Windows, you know, you sit there and go, I can never be bothered. Now is the time to go to Windows Update, okay? Mm. Except for those of course, who are using pirate copies of Windows. Mm. It's not going to help you guys, but you shouldn't be using pirate copies of Windows. But it's funny. I was actually talking down the sidebar. Slight tangent. I was talking to a student of mine. Yeah, me? It's so strange. I was talking to a student of mine when I was teaching a few years ago. It was I won't go into what country he's from, but let's just say it was in the East somewhere. Mm. And he was basically saying that, you know, he doesn't ever give Microsoft money. He hates the company. He thinks that they're the evil empire, and he just pirates everything, right? Mm. And I said to him, I said, you know, that's fine, and it's all fine and good, but I have a particular policy, and I'm not averse to occasionally using, you know, a piece of non-kosher software. It's happened, okay? Mm. Much less on the Mac, funnily enough. I don't know. It's a mindset. But anyway, I actually said to him, mind control. That's right. There,
anyway.
Mind control.
Moving along.
I actually said to him, there are two pieces of software that I don't pirate.
Hmm.
That would be the operating system and the virus protection. It's like I just look at it and go, these are two pieces of software that are fundamental to the operation of my machine.
Yeah.
I don't think I would trust pirate copies of either of these things. So those who are using pirate copies of Windows, tisk, tisk, tisk. But I'm not going to point a finger. What we are going to say is if you haven't updated your Windows in a while or you don't have automatic updates on, go now. Go in the next 3 hours. Okay? Go after you've listened to this. Go and update because Windows or Microsoft discovered a critical flaw in Windows. Now, we all sit there and go, surprise, surprise, Microsoft has critical flaws all the time. Well, funnily enough, this critical flaw dates back about 15 years. Nobody has ever picked up on it. It's a fairly major flaw that allows a hacker or anyone with a modicum of knowledge the ability to take control of your Windows machine remotely using corrupted icons. And we all use shortcuts all the time. We create shortcuts on our desktop. Who knew that there was a fundamental security flaw with the shortcut files? And Microsoft didn't even know this. Somebody finally pointed out to them and says, according to this quote from the Microsoft themselves, actually said the vulnerability could allow remote code execution if the icon of a specifically crafted shortcut is displayed. Mm. So all they have to do is load a piece of software with that icon on it, knowing full well that what they're doing is punching a hole in your system, and then they take control. It's a really, really fundamental issue. And this has existed, apparently, since like Windows 95, 98. It's been there for years and years, and nobody's ever noticed. So, first thing, if you've ever been on your computer and you see all your icons turn white for no apparent reason and stay that way, you've been hacked, because that's the first sign of it. Secondly, go to Microsoft. They've released an out-of-cycle patch. Go right now. Patch this. It is critical.
Do
it now. All right, there is another patch warning bulletin coming up soon. Okay. So, you patched yours this morning?
Yes. No, did my patches this morning.
Very good. Very good. All right. Now, there's also a patch that we're going to have to apply to our iPhones coming up. We'll come back to that in a second. It's not out yet, though. But that's actually kind of a scary one. Okay. The government. Back to the government. We have another government story. I had to break them in two because, you know, too many government stories gives me an aneurysm. all right. So the government, Attorney General Robert McClelland actually defended his department over the censored documents. Do you remember the documents talked about a couple weeks ago? This is the snooping policy. This is the policy where they want to record all internet traffic coming out of Australian users, and they wanted to record it and save it for a period of 5 to 10 years. When a Freedom of Information Freedom of Information request was put forward to the Attorney General saying we want to see that document, it was finally sent out. 90% of it was blacked out. This immediately got everybody talking, saying, you know, how can we discuss this policy if we're not being seen, and so forth. Attorney General Robert McClelland yesterday defended his department for censoring the 90% of the secret document. He said, to be frank, this is his quote. I quote his words.
I thought
his name was Robert, actually. But anyway, he says, to be frank, I haven't seen the document. It goes on.
That's a great start.
I literally haven't seen the document. I don't know the content, and I'm not in a position to judge whether those redactions are or are not appropriate. I haven't been a party to the negotiations. Now, what this actually means is that during this point of federal election that is coming up, the government is taking a step back from this whole thing. And they're basically saying this has never been a policy that is going to the table. This was a discussion between the government regulators and the ISPs at that level to just see about possibilities of this happening, you know, looking at the European system, wondering whether or not it's actually a possibility of making it work and so forth. It was never actually a policy on the table for the government at this point. That's why they blacked it all out, because they said it's not up for discussion yet, you know?
Right.
That's what they say. Now let's actually talk this out. I quite frankly sit there and say, at this time of election where Julia Gillard's numbers have suddenly dropped to 32%, I think the government is backpedaling on a whole bunch of controversial stuff and basically saying, we're not associated with that. We don't want to know about that. All we want to talk about is the positive stuff, the stuff that we did right. It's like, let's talk about it. You notice that she says, I want to do another debate. Let's just talk only on the economy. They don't want to talk about anything else, you know? I think this policy is absolutely incendiary, and I think that they know they can't go to an election with this. If this is on the table just before an election, this will kill them.
Yeah, exactly. So let's forget about it until they bring it up again later.
Absolutely. So I think it's funny that this Robert McClelland also said, the Freedom of Information request was made to the Attorney General's department. That's him. Okay, let's not forget that. It wasn't made to me. You are the Attorney General, dude. He says, the Secretary of the Attorney General...
Anyway, sorry, keep going.
I like Calisinta said, that's funny because we haven't seen the document either. Just a white sheet with black lines. Absolutely. Well said. Anyway, so he says, the Secretary of the Attorney General's Department makes all the calls on this matter. I'm sorry, if the Secretary of the Attorney General is making all these calls, let's just make them the Attorney General, because the Attorney General doesn't seem to be doing anything.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, all right, that's enough politics. Well, actually, it's not enough politics. We have more, but it's not. That's enough Australian politics. They're boring the crap out of me. All right, I don't know about the chat room sound out. Have you guys had enough of this election? Have you had enough of this nonsense where neither party seems to say anything different than anybody else? It seems like a complete waste of time at this point. We should go to the secretaries for our
I love that. I love that numerous errors just gone with dots.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make any sense.
I think he's blacking out his
he's blacking
response.
Out his comments. It's not on the Freedom of Information Act. Okay.
Let's move right along.
Let's talk about iPhones. We have two iPhone stories. One I consider crap and one I consider quite important. Let's talk about crap first. I'm going to read to you from the Sydney Morning Herald, dated August 4th, 2010. Now, mind you, this is 4 days after the iPhone came out.
Right.
Okay? A 22-year-old Monash University IT student from Melbourne, Stephen, who did not want his surname revealed, that's because he's a moron and he would be laughed at, bought the iPhone... Sorry, that's editorial comment. Bought the iPhone 4 on Friday, the day it was released. Good for you. But within hours, he had dropped it on concrete and smashed the screen after the 9.3-millimeter thin device slipped out of his hands while he was carrying too many things. And just so you know, that's what it looked like. All right? Yeah. I brought up a photo for your audio listeners of a cracked iPhone screen. Okay? Yeah. Now, his quote, "I was pretty shattered when I dropped it.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to use it anymore."
Pun.
"Went straight back to my BlackBerry." All right, let me just continue here for a second, because the story just gets more and more.
I'm loving this. Keep going.
All right, according to Alex McCready, director of FixPod of Sydney, he says, "We received our first iPhone 4 screen repair request the day after it was released. It was not unexpected, given that the iPhone 4 does not have the protective chrome bezel around the screen that the earlier models have and has glass on the front and back. Repairs are likely to remain more expensive than for the iPhone 3G and 3GS, as the front glass and touch sensor are laminated to the LCD and cannot be replaced separately. This will make for a clearer screen, however, as dust won't be able to get in between the glass and the LCD." That all sounds great. The article does go on to say that all iPhones are subject to cracked glass. And I brought up a picture on screen of all three models of iPhone with various cracked glass. And the part that made me laugh on all this is the fact that Apple says our glass on the iPhone 4 is chemically strengthened to be 20 times stiffer and 30 times harder than plastic. The glass is ultra durable and more scratch resistant than ever. The type of glass they're using, by the way, this is not part of the article, it's called Gorilla Glass. And it is actually the same glass they use in airplane cockpits and stuff like that. It is incredibly tough. But just like those Arco, whatever they are, measuring cups, which are, you know, heat resistant, shock resistant, everything else, you drop it on concrete, it's going to crack.
It's like there is very few things in the world that will not break.
Absolutely.
Under, you know,
so. I remember when those plates came out. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember them, but was it the 80s or whatever it was? They came out with those plates, those Arco Rock plates
that you could
bang against counters and stuff because they were so tough. And of course, everybody goes, oh, they're indestructible. And then, of course, as soon as they drop it on the tile work, it's shattered, right? Because everything will shatter. Everything has a shatter point.
Yeah.
Now, if you drop an iPhone basically on the ground, it'll probably pretty much be okay. If it hits a certain point, or it hits a rock or a pebble or something on that impact, and there's an impact point, you might get a crack.
Yeah.
You know? Just like if you're in your car and you're driving along and a pebble flies up and it hits your, windscreen,
it
could shatter the windscreen, you know? Sometimes it might just cause a crack. Sometimes it shatters it completely. There's always going to be issues like this.
Yeah.
You know, it's such bullshit. Anyway.
I think more importantly, the guy was carrying too much while holding his phone in his hand and dropped it on concrete.
Exactly.
Bad move.
And he says he hadn't bothered to put a case on it yet. So it didn't have a bumper. It didn't have a case. He's trying to hold too many things in his hand. The thing slips out of his hand onto the concrete and breaks. Now, here's the funny part of this story. There's two funny parts. First part is Stephen of FixPod, we just talked about before, is quoted as answering that quote from Apple, the one I just said about it being tough.
Really?
His answer is, load of crap. That's it.
That's it, right.
That's it. Load of crap. All right, so that's really, like, thought-provoking.
Awesome.
But more importantly to all of this is, if Stephen, moron boy, had basically taken his iPhone after the first day and gone straight to an Apple store, I could almost guarantee, now I'm not going to say they will or not, but I could almost guarantee they would probably swap the phone over. Because there is actually a case of this in America.
I'm sorry, Dave. More importantly, I think if Stephen had to put his phone in his pocket while walking with a large amount of equipment, it would still be alive. So Stephen, tough luck, should have gone to an Apple store. It's your fault.
And he says his BlackBerry's never had this problem. BlackBerry has a plastic screen.
Yes.
So, you know, let's be clear on this.
And I'm pretty sure if he had dropped the plastic, dropped it at height onto concrete, it will still shatter.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I've dropped my iPhone 3G and my iPhone 3GS on concrete. It slipped out of my pocket and fallen onto the concrete several times.
This is your
times.
Pocket up
the breast,
here.
The breast
yeah,
pocket.
Your
yeah.
breast pocket.
It, I've leaned over to get something and it slid out of the pocket. And I have dropped it onto concrete several times. And I've got scratches on the outside of the case, but I've never broken a screen.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't tested it with an iPhone 4. I don't really want to because, you know what? I accept the fact that it has a glass front and back, and I accept the fact that glass can break.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how tough they want to make it. I accept the fact that glass can break. I'm not about to drop it from a high height and see if it actually breaks or not. You know, somebody wants to give me an iPhone 4, I will drop it out the studio window and test for you. All right?
Kellison has said, people versus physics. Physics always wins.
Damn straight. Now, as I was saying about this whole Apple will probably swap it over. In America, a case happened 2 days after its initial release, somebody broke the screen. Now, let's be very clear. There is no phone on the market today, I don't think, that has screens covered by warranty.
Yeah.
Because screens are so fragile, and they know that. So the LCDs are never covered by warranty because they know people are going to sit on their phones and, you know, scratch their phones and put their phone in their pocket with their keys and everything else, right? So they don't. But Apple is so proud of their flagship product. They are so proud of this phone that they tend to bend the rules a little bit. And geniuses at the Genius Bar have kind of carte blanche on making rules. And so there was a guy in America who broke the screen on his phone after the first couple of days. And he went into a Genius Bar and said, what can I do about this? And they said, oh, we'll swap it over for you. And they just gave him a new phone because they don't want people to be unhappy with the experience. Right? So I say
believe it or not, as we brought up last week, Apple doesn't want you to have a bad experience.
That's right. Yeah, Apple doesn't want to be the evil empire. They sometimes act that way, but they don't want to be. They actually do believe in, you know, wanting to service the customer.
And also there's the fact that when you take away the giant conglomerate that is the company and you bring it down, each individual person is still human.
That's right. Damn straight. And so all I can say is if this bozo had taken his phone straight back to Apple and said, oh my God, this happened on the first day, I think they probably would have swapped it over. I don't think. Instead, what did he do? He went to the media.
Yeah.
It's almost like, because we're not having the antenna issue here, it's like the media's going, oh, but we got to find something wrong with it. You know, because everybody else is having fun. We got to find something wrong with it. Anyway, God, all right. All right, let's talk the second iPhone issue, which is the more important one. Last week, as some of you may know, by various other podcasts, a site came up called jailbreakme.com, which actually allowed iPhones and iPads and iPod Touches to be jailbroken. Jailbreaking, for those who don't understand what it is the process where you basically unlock the phone or unhook it from Apple so that you can put on third-party software and stuff that's not approved by Apple, change carriers and all that sort of stuff. And normally, traditionally, you have to actually use software to unlock, and it does void the warranty. Let's make this very clear. You jailbreak your phone, you void your warranty. It doesn't matter if you get caught or not. It is technically against the law, against the warranty, I should say, to jailbreak your phone. In America, they've actually recently made it not against the law anymore, but it does void your warranty, okay?
Yeah.
However, this site, you just plugged your phone in, went to the site, and it came up with a slider saying, slide to jailbreak. You slid it, and it was jailbroken. No software required, and everybody went, woohoo, isn't this fantastic? Well, it got people thinking. It got people thinking about how exactly does that work? Because everybody, after the initial everybody doing it, suddenly people start to stop and focus on the idea that it doesn't ever warn you. Mm. It never comes up with saying you're going to do something to your phone. It never comes up with you need to click this to proceed. You just slide it. It's unlocked. Mm. Something about that doesn't sound right because nothing should be that easy. What happened to security? Turns out that they have actually exposed a security hole in the iOS software. And this applies to all three software. So whether you're on an iPod Touch, an iPad, an iPhone 3, 3GS, and above, iPhone 4 as well, there is a hole that nobody actually noticed. And as somebody said, you know, this is, it's complicated software. Bugs often happen. But this was actually a hole in the mobile Safari browser on these items, which actually allowed a corrupted PDF file to be able to run malicious code.
Yeah.
So if you actually have a version 3 phone, or version 4. I mean, if you're going back to earlier iPhones, I'm not sure if it affects you or not, like the version 2s and stuff, but I think everybody's updated since then. The point is, careful what you're doing online. Because this jailbreak me, first of all, let's not do that. That's not a good idea. Secondly, any PDF downloaded from a website could potentially have this code in it. How serious is this? Apple has actually come out with a statement now saying, we are fixing it. So expect an out-of-cycle patch to come through at some point where they will basically patch that hole because it is a major security flaw. It just punches a hole straight into your phone and allows them to completely hijack your phone. Okay? So just be aware that that is out there. So that's your two pieces of patch news. Although the Apple patch, to be fair, isn't out yet. We're waiting for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if people had... No, because patches won't, of course, supply once you've got the jailbreak on it. So.
Oh, well, apparently, and look, we don't know how legitimate jailbreakme.com is. And this is the problem, is that we don't know anything about them. Okay? And as somebody said, we don't really want to do this because if you do this jailbreakme.com, how much information are they getting off your phone?
Yeah.
While they're doing this miracle patch on your phone, they could be extracting the entire contents of your phone. They could be pulling off any security information. They could be putting stuff onto your phone. We don't know. We don't know who they are, okay? Yeah. So it's probably wiser not to use this service at this point.
Yeah.
But apparently if you did do that, and this is the big what if you did do that jailbreak, apparently if you did a factory restore on your phone, your phone went back to normal. But the question is it really going all the way back to normal, or is there now hidden code?
Yeah.
We don't know. And that's the thing. Nobody has actually been able to answer this question yet. So as long as nobody can answer that question, don't do it. You know, quite frankly, it comes down to it. They don't punch a hole. Okay, fair enough, Callison. That's a matter of semantics. Callison says they don't punch the hole, though the hole is there already. Yes.
Yeah.
What they're doing is they're taking advantage of that hole.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're basically saying there is a hole in your security. We run that PDF file. That PDF runs the malicious code, and we suddenly take control of everything that's there. That's right. And Numero Zero says, alternatively, if you want to jailbreak it using the more trusted apps. Yes. There is actually, what are they called? The iPhone dev team.
Yeah.
Released the official jailbreak, and this they have jailbreak on the iPhone 4 now. So
yeah.
If you feel the need to jailbreak, I don't know. Let's just discuss this for a second, Josh, because the next subject is heavy duty and I don't want to talk about it anyway, but we're going to. But let's just, jailbreak or not to jailbreak?
I don't know. Like, I mean, there's a part of me at the moment which is considering the situation. And, like, I mean, whether or not I do it, we'll stay off air.
I'll say it for the record. I would never jailbreak my phone. And I'll tell you why.
But let me explain my situation. My situation is I have an iPhone which is an ex-contract phone. I can't get it unlocked without paying money. It's currently on iPhone 4, and it's an original 3G. It is almost unbearable to use now. It has become, it has gone from one of my favorite devices of all time to one of my most hated devices.
It doesn't help that you put iPhone 4 on it, though.
Well, again, but you don't really have a choice. Because to run some of the apps that I play, once they're uploaded, I can't use them unless I do this update.
Fair enough.
So My phone now runs like a dog. To load an internet page, I've clocked it at 2 to 3 seconds to load the application now. God. It is getting ridiculous how slow it gets. And on top of that, I now have the fact that I am about to get a new one and therefore want to use this as a device which will be used basically entirely for music and movies and so on and so forth. Now, the use in that has become unbearable to the point where when I load it sometimes, it will stay blank for up to 5 to 10 seconds. And then when I'm in the application, it will randomly stop and not work for about 2 to 3 seconds before I can start scrolling again.
Do you know what that sounds like? It sounds a lot to me a lot like, you remember when we had the older PCs and we'd have like, I don't know, let me see if I date myself here. When I used to go back and we used to have like the Pentium 1 and then you get a new operating system and you'd go, oh, cool, I can't wait till you put the new operating system on. You put it on and of course the whole thing just slows to a grind because the processor can't handle the new operating system.
Now, I understand what you're saying there, but the huge difference between that and this is I don't get a choice.
That's true.
And this is where my problem comes into it. If I have a legitimate way of doing this that is theoretically, technically not illegal, but will speed up my phone, and if I'm not going to use it for internet and so on and so forth and just use it for its actual thing, as Numero Zero has said in our chat room, if I'm not using it for illegal products, it's just a way to open up the customizability.
Okay, but question is this. If you could legally roll your phone back to version 3... Yeah, and which you can. Apparently there are patches available where you can actually roll it back to version 3. What is the difference? This is just running off the top of my head here, but what is the difference between, well, let's put it back to the PC analogy, okay? Yeah. Let's say I'm running a 486, running Windows 3.5, right? 3.1, sorry. And so I've got Windows 3.1 and my 386. Windows 95 comes out and I want to use it, but it's going to slow my machine down.
Yeah.
Okay? We're not getting technical here. I probably wouldn't. But anyway. So
older version versus new version.
Older version versus newer version. So I decide to keep my older version, but now there are going to be some software titles out there I can't run because they're only 32-bit.
Totally different situation because the difference is on the situation that you're talking about. Products don't update, so I can't use my software from my old system. That's the difference. I have programs that won't run because they are iOS 4 software now.
Oh, I see what you're saying, because the actual manufacturers have gone
Because the manufacturers have updated past a point where I now no longer have a choice. And some of my most used apps on the device, I now can't use if I roll it back.
But you could choose not to update them.
Again, I have to re-download. No, I can't because they're updated now.
No, I'm saying before they, when you first got offered the update, you could have said no.
Again, but what if I don't want to now? What if I didn't notice because no one told anyone that it was going to slow down
my system?
That's
the problem, is that nobody told us.
And also, there are no versions available now. Without going to a system external from Apple's services, I cannot get an old version of those products now. So now that I am aware that they have made my system unusable, it's not like a computer, because with a computer, I could go back to the website and download an older version of the software. I can't do that anymore. So this is why I don't believe that Apple has approached this correctly. They should be addressing the fact that their programs have actually made the system.
There should be dual versions of the programs.
And I don't understand why Apple hasn't addressed that. And
I was actually talking to an app developer while I was in line for 9 hours waiting for my iPhone. I was talking to an app developer who I did give our card, and hopefully he will eventually come on the show. I've invited him on to give us the insider scoop on what it's like to work for as an app developer for the App Store. He was very interesting, though, because he actually said there are several guidelines that app developers are supposed to follow. One of those guidelines that they're supposed to follow is that their app should be backwards compatible to the older apps. Because I know that there's a few iPhone apps that I have on my iPad, which I can no longer use. They were working fine, and now when you try and sync your iPad, they come up saying, these use a different version of the operating system because they're now set for iPhone 4 and they no longer work on the iPad. And that frustrates me. But according to him, he said the guideline says that they should actually be When they test software, they test it across all the different devices to make sure it runs on all the different devices. And there are going to be protocols that take advantage of the new software, but if your phone doesn't have that new software, then it just won't work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Calisinta says that they now have... Calisinta, he or she? I can never remember. Calisinta says, I have folders on my iPad thanks to the jailbreak and voice control. In November, you're going to have that anyway, though. Because the iOS 4 will come
to iPad. Oh, God, no. I don't need any more things slowing down
my
system.
iPad.
Oh, iPad.
This is iPad.
Oh, thank God. No. Oh, well, sorry, I didn't read the iPad thing.
Yeah,
I thought it was iPad. I thought it was voice control for the iPhone. Yeah. I was like, no, please stop adding things
to
it.
Actually, you should already have voice control on your iPhone. iPhone
3G?
Voice control was added to the iPhone... actually, it could be 3GS upwards.
3GS.
It was added to 3GS upwards.
With the 4 upgrade.
Yeah. No, with 3GS. When the stock standard 3GS had voice control. Stock standard 3GS had voice control. I've never actually tested voice. I actually hate voice control, quite frankly. It doesn't work very well. And I don't think
it ever has.
And it's annoying, as far as I'm concerned. I love folders, though, and I want folders on my iPad, but it's not worth... Jailbreaking, for me, is not worth voiding the warranty.
Yeah.
It's not. After a year, all bets are off. But for that first year, it's not.
I'm using a 3G, Dave.
Yeah,
I'm way past.
I'm talking about Calisinta.
This is all hypothetical anyway. Nothing's been done to my phone at this stage.
I'm talking about my experience with Apple has been they try and sell me the patches that add features.
Yes,
but Calisinta, they've already publicly said the iOS 4 upgrade coming for iPad will be free for all iPad users because it was not out on time for the release of iPad.
Exactly.
So they've already stated from the beginning that that will be a free upgrade for all iPads. So keep up with your iPad announcements. keep up with your Steve notes. Can you put iOS 4 on iPad? Not yet, Rogue Sire. It is the iOS on the iPad is slightly different to the iOS.
So they're
actually a point number sequence out.
Yeah.
So the 3 version that is on here, this version was never available for iPhone and vice versa.
Yeah.
They're actually just a point version out, and the iOS 4 for iPad doesn't come out until November. It was supposed to be August, but it looks like we put it back.
Right.
So, knowing Apple, it'll probably be next year sometime. It's the way things work. Look, I don't jailbreak for one reason. The one thing, and this is the argument that Apple uses, and it's the argument that I actually like, which is the fact that I like the fact, and I think it's because I'm a Mac user, okay? I think people who are on PC have a very different experience. But Macintosh to iDevice, the integration is seamless. And so the idea that you just plug your phone in and it syncs up and you can just drop stuff in and off of it, on and off of it through iTunes, which, by the way, for Mac users, works.
Yeah.
You know, iTunes on the PC sucks.
Oh, I know.
You know, and so as a Mac user, the integration between these devices is fantastic, and I wouldn't want to jailbreak it to disrupt
integration.
Whereas if I was a strictly PC user, and yes, I have a PC, but I don't use it for this purpose, but if I was strictly a PC user like I used to be, there is no way I wouldn't have jailbroken this thing by now. I would have gotten so frustrated with the way... Because as a PC user, I never used iTunes. Couldn't stand it. I was looking for any third-party alternative. In fact, Winamp actually allowed you to copy files to your iPod. Back then, there was no iPhones. But in the old days of the iPods, you could use Winamp to try and grab files and drag them over. Anything to get away from...
Well, I have a lot of problems with the fact that, as an example, I listen to a lot of music. And one thing that really frustrates me about iTunes is the fact that it is incredibly difficult to get artwork if iTunes can't find it. I'm listening to an Australian band at the moment that doesn't have artwork. And for me to update the artwork, I have to use a program called Media Monkey, find the artwork, put it on, close iTunes, re-scan all my directories just to get that picture in there. It's like I could just be using a different piece of software.
Wow, that's not like that on a Mac at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, the automatic artwork grabber that the iTunes has isn't particularly good because all it's doing
is... It sucks, let's
be honest.
Well,
because all it's doing is using Gracenote.
Yeah.
And Gracenote doesn't have a full collection of artwork. So, but to add your own custom artwork on a Mac is literally as simple as highlighting it, saying, get info, bring up the information, just dragging the artwork, dropping it onto it, and saying, okay, you're done.
Twitch. Anyway, moving right along.
So it's done. Anyway, so there are definite advantages to being a Mac user while using an iDevice. They say that they're cross-platform compatible, but really not as good. Numero Zero says they use a program called iArt.
You should look at it. I am just telling him now that I will look into that.
Yes, I might have a look into that as well.
Anyway,
okay. Moving right along. That's our I rant for this today. We've got one last thing. This was actually kind of our subject for the day, but we're running out of time already, funnily enough. But I thought we'd just talk very quickly, since we talked about security of the iPhone. Let's talk about BlackBerry for a minute. Josh, have you been keeping up with this?
Sorry?
Have you been keeping up with this at all, with the BlackBerry in the Middle East?
No, I haven't actually heard anything about this.
Okay, let's start. We're going to simplify this because it's a very, very complicated issue, and let's see if we can simplify this. Basically, it started with the United Arab Emirates saying to RIM, who are the makers of the BlackBerry phone, that they need to basically give over the encryption keys for the BlackBerry because the BlackBerry's security actually does not meet the requirements of their security. Now, before you sit there and say, but, you know, I thought BlackBerries were really secure, that's the point. Apparently, and to summarize this really, really easily, the United Arab Emirates, has basically said, we can't spy on our people if they use BlackBerries. It's too secure.
Wow.
So
what a shame.
What a shame.
I guess.
So this has actually started to make other people wake up. Saudi Arabia has now basically said they're going to join this. What was it? Indonesia wants to join it. And we've had Iran basically saying they're going to join this policy. They're basically cutting off BlackBerry. They're cutting off all text and email and internet services from the BlackBerry service until they can have access to the files, until they can have access to the records, because at this point they're worried, as a matter of national security, that people could be using BlackBerries for purposes like, you know, terrorism and stuff like that. Let's not beat around the bush. They want to be able to keep control of their people, and they can't at the moment if they're using BlackBerry phones. What do you think?
That's amazing.
I love the fact that they are so blatantly honest about it, though.
Well, look, I mean, yeah, that's the bit that I'm reeling over. I'm like, wow, just come out and say it like that. Just be like, wow, if you won't let us spy on you, then we'll just cut you off.
I'm like, Callison says apparently part of the issue is they don't like the teens flirting with each other. That's true.
Either way, that's a very, very curious way to go about it, just bringing it up as a subject.
This thing has been escalating all week, let me just tell you. Now, RIM CEO, or co-CEO, I should say, Michael Lazaridis, came out with a comment. His comment was, if they can't deal with the internet, they should just shut it off.
We've already learned that there are people now that can do that.
Apparently, that's right.
Have we found all of them yet?
No, not yet. We'll find more. Lazaridis said, this is about the internet. Everything on the internet is encrypted. This is not a BlackBerry-only issue. If they can't deal with the internet, they should just shut it off. He basically says, according to the United Arab Emirates, they say BlackBerry violates its telecommunications regulations. And as a result, they plan to block the BlackBerry services altogether as of October 11th.
At least they've given them some time to work to a middle ground.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
So what makes BlackBerry so secure? I mean, this is the question. So I did a little bit of digging, and apparently what makes BlackBerry so secure, and by the way, a pretty damning praise, they've already said, oh, iPhones are fine. apparently what makes BlackBerry so secure is they use double encryption. All BlackBerry data is actually funneled through their Canadian servers, which is the other issue, which is the United Arab Emirates and other countries are basically saying you need to set up a data center within our borders. We don't like the fact that all our data is going to you and then coming back again. You know what I mean? Because what's happening is they can't do anything once it's over there. You know, now the data on those servers is encrypted, and they have the encryption keys. Where BlackBerry's become almost unhackable is the fact that each BlackBerry phone has its own encryption key.
Oh, wow.
So, and RIM doesn't have those keys. only the phone does. So to actually hack a message, apparently, on a BlackBerry, you would have to have the encryption key from the sender, which would be the server, and you would have to have physically have the phone. Because you have to get the key off the phone.
That's awesome.
So this is why they have become the number one choice in business, of course, because... and think about this. Even through all of that security, Barack Obama had to have a special BlackBerry made that had special encryption put onto it as the president.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how secure his goddamn phone is?
That's pretty amazing.
You know, so anyway, so... at this point in time, it is all going crazy over there, and it has got to the point where, and this is the part that I think is just wonderful, Hillary Clinton is now going over to the Middle East to sit down and have talks in Lebanon, basically trying to figure out a solution to this. You get the State Department involved, you got to ask yourself, there's something much more going on here, you know?
Yeah.
Well, maybe
not. Maybe it's just literally that they just feel the need to be able to hack anyone's, like...
Well, when you're in a government that is actually a regime rather than a democracy, you've got to be prepared for the fact that, you know, they're going to be tapping everything, and if they can't tap it, they're not going to want it. You know, it's as simple as that. And they can't tap the BlackBerry, apparently. Now, according to Clinton, she says, her quote is, "We are taking time to consult and analyze the full range of interests and issues at stake because we know that there is a legitimate security concern." But she said that the legitimate right for free use and access has to also be taken into account.
Yeah, no, I was about to say that. That's what I'm more worried about here. Yeah. I'm like, well,
which is why they could never stop this in the States, because you have the ability to be able to do all this. But, you know, it's so funny because I can actually remember, let me see, far away. I can actually remember going back about 10 years ago when they wanted to bring in 128-bit encryption.
Yeah.
And everybody was basically saying it was going to be a national security risk and they couldn't do it because, you know, it was like military-grade encryption. And, you know, if they brought in 128-bit encryption, then, you know, it would be people would be unhackable and all this sort of stuff. And I look at the thing is how time passes.
Yeah.
You know? We're already talking about 256-bit encryption, you know, it's like, and military uses higher than that, and you sit there and go, Jesus Christ, guys, it's just encryption, you know? So I think the fact that we have, look, I don't have a solution to this, I just wanted to talk it out, because I think that it is just amazing. We have a statement from Imad Hobalai, I can't pronounce his name, I don't know who this is, but anyway, somebody from from Lebanon, who basically says, we need to make an arrangement with BlackBerry or come to an understanding with them that satisfies law enforcement concerns. I think what would satisfy them, quite frankly, I think the answer here is they put a BlackBerry server in the United Arab Emirates and they take off the encryption.
Yeah, well, maybe for that country.
For that country. But the problem is, then your BlackBerries don't become all cross-compatible with each other.
Yeah, and also, what stops people from getting them from overseas?
And what happens, and what they're actually saying, it's gone to the point now where it's not just BlackBerries in those countries, though. They're saying business people who are traveling to the United Arab Emirates and to Jordan and other countries like that with their BlackBerries suddenly find themselves go dark because the service is being cut off in those countries.
Jesus.
So you sit there and go... So this is not just people buying BlackBerries in those countries. It is actually any BlackBerry in that country. I'd say, oh no, people might be unhackable. This clearly is exactly the opposite of what we want. Numero zero, thank you. And Callison says, this is all great advertisement for BlackBerry. A phone so secure, governments want to ban it.
Nice one, dude. Nice one.
We don't even want to think about how Apple would advertise on this. Buy our phone. Anybody can hack it.
I think it's
something that we are keeping our eyes on. I think
we'll definitely keep following up.
We're going to keep following this one because I think it's an amazing turn of events. Why nobody has noticed this until now? How long have BlackBerry's been in use?
Oh, God. I still remember BlackBerry's. How many years ago?
I remember when the first BlackBerries came out five, six years ago. I don't know. Chat room, anybody got any better numbers than that? I remember when they first came out and thinking, wow, what a neat idea. Email on a phone, you know? I thought that was so cool. Now, I actually don't know. I don't use a BlackBerry. I look at it and go, if to me, it feels like a little bit of a limited device, quite frankly. And it's funny, have you seen the new BlackBerry that's coming out? This is all coming basically on the eve that they're releasing a brand new model as well. This can't be good for them. They're definitely before the iPhone. Definitely before the iPhone. What is it? Well, Apple's advertisement would be, our phone's secure because you can't make any phone calls. Ooh, that's only in the States, though.
Oh, come on now. Come on.
All right, chat room, sound out. Who has an iPhone here? I need to know. Has anybody in Australia that we know of had a dropped call? I mean, that's the thing. We hear about all these dropped calls. We hear all about, you know, the reception issues of AT&T and all the problems, and all the other podcasts go on, and all the tech journalists go on about how the service is terrible and so forth. I've been an iPhone user now for 3 years. I've never had a problem with my phone. You know, and I just look at it and go, it's just a phone. It works like a phone. It works perfectly well. No, yeah. That doesn't count towards phone surface numero zero. iPod touches do not have a phone in them. That doesn't count. So anyway, so all right, we will keep our eye on that. I want to see how far this escalates, and I think that if RIM doesn't come to the party, I think what's going to happen is BlackBerry will get banned in those countries, because I think really, when it comes down to it, the United Arab Emirates doesn't have anything to lose over this.
No, not really. So, well, look, we'll see where it heads from here, I guess. We'll keep an eye on it, and we'll come back when we know a bit more.
Damn straight. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap up tech. I think we're going to move ourselves out of here, unless the chat room has anything. Okay. So for anybody who's watching the replay, I do apologize for the blue screen that you're seeing right now. Unfortunately, we've had a breakdown on the PC side. I'd like to point out, on the PC side of things.
Go blow it out your ass.
All right. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've actually just said on Geek Action, sorry, what is this show called again? It's twice today I've screwed this up. All right, let's start it again. Agree or disagree with anything that we have to say on tech, actually, or you'd like to, you know, send us a suggestion or a comment or anything like that, send it to geektech@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. That is a Sydney number. So if you are calling from outside of Australia, you will have long-distance call rates. We also have some swag. You can buy T-shirts, mugs, and so forth. You can get at cafepress.com.au/geekactually. And of course, you can follow our fan page on Facebook, which is facebook.com/geekactually. Now, do remember that we did break this show up. So if you are just listening to this show and wondering where the film component is, we also have film, actually, that we record as well. And we also have the Geek Actually After Show. And you can search for all of those on iTunes under their various names or find links for them at geekactually.com. One quick shout out very quickly to our friend Josh Spencer, who is doing new artwork for us. Now, I had a comment the other day that that the film actually opening credits were a little bit rough around the edges. And so, and I just have to stress that those are temporary because we are waiting for some new graphics and stuff before I start redoing everything. But you can find out more about Josh Spencer over at Spencer Cartoons, and he's at attackninja.blogspot.com, which I love that URL. And he is preparing up some great artwork for us. It's just not quite finished yet. When it's finished, we will make it all public. And of course, this show goes out live every Saturday starting at 12 o'clock. We do tech, film, and then the after show all in a row, and we start at 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC+10, and you can find that at geekactually.com/live. And Josh, where can they find out more about you?
Well, we would obviously run the slide if we could see anything, but we can't.
I can see things perfectly.
So anyone can come see me at rawdlc.com, which is of course me and the boys doing games and stuff. We have a bunch of new articles. We've had a very busy week from the other two guys. And we also have a show which goes out live at 8 p.m. on Wednesday nights, except for this coming week where we're going out on Tuesday night because people are flying over to other countries.
Ah, fair enough. Okay.
So, yes, Tuesday, 8 p.m. this week, Wednesday every other week.
Fantastic. And of course, you can follow me if you want to follow me personally. I don't know why you want to, but if you want to follow me personally, you can find me at twitter.com/DaveMcVeigh or facebook.com/DaveMcVeigh. Or of course, I have my own personal website, which you can find at davidmcveigh.net. Otherwise, everything I do, most of my time is spent at geekactually.com, and that's where you're going to find us. Okay, I think that's it. I think we're done. I think we have nothing else to say today, so we're going to get ourselves out of here. And for Me, I say thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, me as well.
Josh says too. And we'll see you all next week.